Hello and welcome along to the Racing Riot podcast. Charlie Post is my co-host. How are you doing? That rhymes. Lovely.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, no, I'm good form, Josh. I mean, as we're going to discuss, we've wrapped up another jump season, probably one that hopefully we're not going to see the like of again with no crowds and Cheltenham behind closed doors, Aintree behind closed doors. And let's pray to God that that is the last that's going to ever be. And we can get back through this flat season now to a sense of normality and the paying public back watching sport on the whole. As in, I said to someone the other day, I cannot wait to get back to a live sporting event, a football match or a game of cricket, or to be honest, anything. Right now, I'm just desperate to watch sport live.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And sort of being involved in racing, we're quite lucky where we can go to the odd point-to-point here and there, the odd meeting, but it's still not the same, is it, without spectators? And that is the big thing. And racing is a spectator sport, and it's nothing without the spectators. A bit like football, all that's going on in that at the moment.
Well, football I found really weird to watch. I think we discussed it before. And being at Cheltenham, and I was fortunate to be at the festival, but I think it was one of the most bizarre environments I've ever been in all honesty, as in seeing this top class racing being played out in front of probably a few hundred is pushing it, and seeing this and hearing this weird noise that was created by 20 or 30 of the Irish teams coming out onto the best mate enclosure to cheer their winners in. And it actually sounding like there were a lot of them there as it sort of echoed round this empty race course was something that will stay with me for quite a while, because it was quite bizarre.
Yeah, very memorable season. The Guineas weekend last weekend. But before we make the switch to flat racing and have our full focus on that, we've got a brilliant interview with Sean Levy coming up later. We're going to go through our best moments of the jumps campaign over in Ireland or in Britain. And we've got a couple of categories or six categories that we're going to go through and nominate our winners for them. The first one being the best chasing performance. Charlie, which one chasing performance were you most impressed with this season?
There are a few notable ones, but I've gone for one right at the very back end, and redemption for Shaq and Pourswar at Punchestown. This had a really sort of vintage field element to it. Nube Negra narrowly denied in the champion chase, and of course Alaho, the runaway Ryanair winner. And this was Shaq and Pourswar right back to his very best, and for me it showcased what in hindsight we should have seen at Cheltenham, as in him being allowed to use that incredibly high cruise gear. He jumped fabulous, being allowed to sort of dominate. And I know people are still going to say he didn't get up the hill and he doesn't handle Cheltenham. And look, that might well be the case. But to me, it was a strangely unusual champion chase with no real speed. As in they hacked round, in all honesty. He ripped and teared for his head from Pooltown, and he never really found rhythm. Travelled into it though, still looking like he was going to hose up. And to me, he didn't get up the hill personally because of those early race exertions. And before I can say conclusively Cheltenham is in his track and doesn't get up the hill, I would like to see him allowed to use his stride, allowed to use that high tempo. Yeah, before we have to conclude that he's a flatter track horse, because I don't think that's the case.
The champion chase picture looks fascinating for next year, with the likes of the exciting novices Shishkin and Enigamine coming through. They look monstrous. What we've seen of them so far, Nube Negra still a fairly young horse, and the likes of a Shaq and Pourswar, if he can bounce back and put his best performance in at Cheltenham, he's going to take the world a beating.
And Alaho, do you think intermediate trips are his thing?
Yeah, well, funny enough, my best chase performance this year is Alaho winning the Ryanair. I thought it was almost Vitor-esque. It was just relentless from the front, jumped brilliantly. Rachel Blackmore put so much pressure on those riders in behind. And he had horses like Mr. Fisher, Min, Fakir du Dries in trouble a long way from home. And
question for you now with Alaho, because it was spectacular.
Yeah.
Can he and does he need to back it up with something else, because his profile suggests a little bit that, I'm not saying this was a fluke, far from it, because he did back it up with a good second in a grade one over 2 mile.
Yeah.
But it was way above anything we've really seen before from Alaho.
Yeah. I'd agree. I think he loves Cheltenham. The first time that we saw him at Cheltenham, he was second or third in the Bartlett, and then he was third in the RSA behind Milan Arindo in Champ, and Milan Arindo went on to win a Gold Cup, then dropped down in Trip over 2.5. I think there's an argument to say that he'd have won the Marsh the year that he ran in the RSA. I think people were crying out for that as well, and people were unsure when he was stepped up to 3 miles. I think he's a really good horse. I think he comes alive around Cheltenham, and it wouldn't surprise me if he followed a similar path to this year, where it took him a couple of runs to get ready and then win a lower class event and then go into Cheltenham and have a massive chance in the Ryanair. And with Rachel Blackmore riding the way she is, I see no reason why a repeat performance couldn't be put in place. My hurdler of the season, or hurdling performance of the season, was Honeysuckle in the Irish Champion Hurdle. I thought she was just electric. I don't think there was much between that and the Champion Hurdle at Cheltenham, but I think it was the winning distance. She didn't put a foot wrong at Leopardstown, and it was over from a long way out. And I think, for me, that's what I'd say. Honeysuckle in the Irish Champion was the best hurdling performance of the season.
And I think it kind of finally put to bed this, again, a question mark which was almost strange about whether she could be slick enough over her hurdles to win a Champion Hurdle. Do you agree? Like, mm-hmm. And I think that race at Leopardstown kind of finally put that argument to bed, because she jumped very well then. She jumped even better at Cheltenham and dominated the 2 mile Champion Hurdle scene, didn't she?
Well, it was clearly very good, because Connections made their mind up after that race that the Champion Hurdle at Cheltenham was her target rather than the Mayor's Hurdle. And she won the race last year. She'd have almost certainly won it this year if she'd gone there again.
Funny, though, that about a mare that's unbeaten and remains unbeaten after Punchestown, where possibly she wasn't at her brilliant best, but got the job done.
Like, I think she was just champion, a bit bored in front and just wanted a bit of composition.
But I wonder if in hindsight, Rachel kind of wishes she'd kind of kept the revs up a little bit more going to the last, you know, as in it was almost like racing the bag. And so she kind of let her go and pop in. And as you said, at the end of the long season and maybe just dossing a bit, she almost jammed on a bit more than I think Rachel Blackmore possibly expected, but then picked up well. But a filly, a mare that is 12 from 12, and yet midway through this year she was still unbeaten, and yet we're querying her Champion Hurdle credentials, which I think we can categorically say we're querying no more. Yeah. She is by far the best on this scene, and it's going to take a special novice to come through, really, to threaten her at the moment, unless she regresses seriously by the time the next season comes around.
And with the likes of those novices, you'd think Appreciate It will go over a fence. Bob Ollinger looks like he's made for a fence. Maybe a horse that we've not seen, like Fernie Hollow, could go for a Champion Hurdle route and maybe be a strong candidate for Willie Mullins. But then again, he's been quite fragile, so we need to see him really step up, and he's got to step up a heck of a long way to give her £7. I think that's the frightening thing.
It is a very good point, that, because you are thinking, well, if Appreciate It and Bob Ollinger both go down the chasing route, it's hard to see beyond her already, isn't it? You know, like you say, Fernie Holly, you could truck into the mix.
But for instance, like a Gaylard de Menier isn't going to be beating Honeysuckle over 2 miles.
I can't see it.
And neither is a Bally Adam or a Blue Lord.
And I think, again, they've already said with Gaylard de Monseal, they're hoping that a fence will make him even more sort of tractable, the fact that he's inclined to overrace a bit. So you're getting the vibe again, he's going to be looking at the chasing route.
Yeah.
So, it's very tricky to kind of see a rival coming through that you're immediately going, this is a contender right now. And looking at her contemporaries, she's a lot better than them.
Yeah, and you are definitely scratching at a surface to find a rival. Maybe we saw glimpses of a superstar, and She Wears It Well at the start of the season, but she's been out with injury. She could maybe progress into a horse that I think, I know the connection is sort of very highly of her or Fernie Hollow, maybe from the Willie Mullins camp, but from this far out, it looks almost wrapped up already. I can't see Epitont laying any glove on her. She's been able to do it every time that she met her this season. What would be your hurdling performance of the year?
It's a funny one. I've gone novice division, and I've just, from, well, I think visual, but I think it was backed up by the time as well. Bob Olinger for me at Cheltenham in the Ballymore. It just, it to me, it was the novice race of the festival with Gerard de Monceil, who's come out and won subsequently. And of course, Brave Man's Game, who you possibly blotted his copybook at Aintree, but also maybe didn't quite see the trip out after a hard race at Cheltenham. And to me, it just, it took my breath away seeing him so keen early, Ray Cham do all she could to sort of anchor him and get him to switch off. And then the way he came storming down the hill, like running away, like he just jumped in and absolutely smashed some good novices. It just ranked him, it just marked him out to me as, to say a real top notch, I mean, he's won a grade one, but a horse that could step into open company and be a major player. And if we are going to see him chasing, it's highly exciting. And so that was my hurdling performance of the year.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair one. And he's a horse that if Honeysuckle wasn't around, Henry de Romhead might be tempted to send him the champion hurdle route. He looks like he's got all the credentials. But when you've got horses like Tell Me Something Girl, Honeysuckle, you don't really need to.
And we have seen in over time with Istabrak and Forheen, to name a couple, the 2.5 mile novice hurdle at the Cheltenham Festival can be a good trial, like yeah. And a good stepping stone to champion hurdle glory. And I do wonder if the decision re Bob Olinger might be different if Honeysuckle wasn't around, because like you say, he didn't look short of toe at the festival over 2.5, and you need to, it's that classic thing, they seem to get reeled out, the cliche about all the Cheltenham race, oh, you need to stay to win this race, but you do have to stay to win a champion hurdle as well as having electric pace. And Bob Olinger looks, or to all the world, like he has that combination.
I think it's a perfect time to mention the next category, and that's the most exciting novice. I've said Bob Olinger purely because I think he could step down and be a champion hurdle horse next year. I think he could step up to 3 miles and be a 3 mile staying chaser. So he's got so much untapped potential. I think he could do absolutely anything, and that's what makes him the most exciting novice for me. You like one in the novice chasing ranks?
Yeah, I've gone for Shishkin. It's a fairly boring shout, but I mean, this is all about quality, these lists, so that they are pretty standard. He was dominant. I mean, you could argue, you know, All Mankind maybe wasn't helped by being taken on in the Arkell, and of course, Energamine was a late withdrawal, but you can do no more than dominate.
What did you make of his performance at Aintree?
It wasn't probably his brilliant best, but I think we're going to reflect later on about the fact that we have seen plenty of horses looking slightly lackluster come the end of the season, and it's an interesting discussion. But again, he got it done, didn't he? And that's all that really matters. He's got the sort of, I've mentioned before, I feel like similarities with Altior and the way he goes through things. And as you've already alluded to with your point about Shaq and Poussoir, what we are on the verge of is an incredibly, incredibly exciting division with Shaq and Poussoir, Shishkin, Energamine, Nube Negra, I'm probably forgetting a couple of others as well. And if they all pitched up, it's a race that could well be to savour. It could be the race of the whole festival if they get there with all their profiles intact.
And it's going to be interesting to see how Willie Mullins splits Shaq and Poussoir and Energamine next year. Maybe one of them could step up and trip, more likely to be Energamine. Shock of the season. There's always shocks. Now, the two that I've pointed out, I think Kulrivi beating Monkfish and Envoirelaine was a shock, because we thought we'd have this big matchup. We'll talk about that later. But the one I'm going to go with was in another grade one, and that is, I'm sure that there's been bigger shocks, but at the very highest level in the King George, it looked like it was Surname versus Clander's Oboe 2.0. Harry Cobden making the wrong decision the first time, and Sam Twiston Davis capitalising, and then this time Clander's Oboe went off favourite. Surname was impressive in the Charlie Hall before, but it was the other Paul Nicholls horse, a fourth string actually with Real Steel in there, Frodon and Bryony Frost, dominating from the front, a real fan favourite. He's just so willing under her. We've come so accustomed to seeing him fly around Cheltenham, especially over an intermediate trip. And to see it over 3 miles in a King George, a race like that, he had, it seems so silly that he had his day in the sun, because he's had so many days in the sun. He's just been a brilliant horse. But I think that was his absolutely crowning moment. I think the Ryanair was fantastic when he won it.
Again, you've got to be careful not to try and take away from the performance, but given a tactically excellent ride at Kempton by Briony Frost as well. And, you know, he rounded it off with another heartwarming triumph at Sandown, didn't he? And Froden's a special horse, isn't he? He's trained by a guy that you write off at your peril in Paul Nicholls. And as you say, he went in there definitely third string, if not possibly fourth, and yeah, showed them that that was all completely wrong as well. And he was very, very good at Kempton. Like I say, he benefited from a good ride also, but there's no getting away from the fact his performance was excellent.
And there's one thing that you could say, that it wasn't a massive, massive shock, because we knew that Froden had the ability to win really top-class Grade 1s, but over 3 miles against those, at the time, he wasn't really in the conversation, and that's what made it such a big shock for me. What was your shock of the season?
Well, I mean, again, this is a good horse, as in Chantry House, but I'm just going for the shock because of the Envoy Alam bubble bursting at Cheltenham.
Heartbreaking.
There was a number of short-priced bankers at the festival this year, but I'd have said, if you'd have canvassed plenty of opinion, they'd have said Envoy Alam was the biggest banker of the lot, even with the late change of stable. And to see him tip up early on, to me, it was a huge shock watching, because again, you probably didn't factor that in, because he looked such a sure-footed jumper throughout the season. And so yeah, that's where I'm going to go with that. And like I say, that's taking nothing away from Chantry House, who is a talented performer in his own right. Probably got lucky again at Aintree, so he's maybe also to have on your side, because yeah, the cards seem to fall right for him.
Jockey of the season.
Harry Skelton, first championship, bagged a few Grade 1s along the way as well, alongside his brother, who deserves enormous credit in this. You know, they almost come together, don't they? Their achievements, whether it's riding or training, are as a team.
Well, I think they take a lot of pride in the other winning.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that they're both so actively involved. I mean, don't get me wrong, Dan doesn't ride the horses. Thank goodness for the horses. But
he won't be very happy about that.
Yeah, but, you know, but he was so invested in Harry's springtime charge for this title, as in, I've said before, he was making lists of horses that could win. He was ringing Ian Popham, one of Harry's best mate, and his agent, saying, look, this is where Harry's going to be riding for the next 3 weeks. Get on to trainers. Let's get him more rides. Dan was the driving force behind this championship for Harry. So they do work, come together. And I know Harry is a huge voice behind the scenes of the training operation. So they are a couple that work well, incredibly well together. And like I say, for Harry, he was a shooting star as a young rider at Paul Nicholls's, you know, niche market. It went in the Irish National, as I think Harry was still a teenager. I remember him winning on like Celestial Halo and things like that at Paul's. Things plateaued, and then all of a sudden his brother starts training, they're working together, and it's just been relentless progress. And I'd have said, actually, I think they probably were more actively going after the title in years gone by, but Harry's had a fantastic season. And then I think they got to sometime early in the new year and saw there was a shot at it. And as the Skeltons do, they focus their attention on it. And then they're rarely wide of the mark when they set their mind on something. And it's going to be interesting to see how much they go after trying to retain the title.
I don't know when this is going to stop, as in the rise of the Skeltons. It doesn't seem like it's going to stop anytime soon. It seems that they're so fixated on domination, whether that's the Jumps Jockeys Championship or Trainers Championship. Dan had a brilliant piece in the Racing Post where he said, next season, I'm going to give it a good chance.
Well, I think if you're making predictions, whether it'll be next season, but be under no illusions, within the next few years, Dan will be champion trainer.
Yeah.
And knowing them, I'm sure there is a desire for Dan to be champion trainer and Harry to be champion jockey in the same year also, because those sort of things appeal to them. And like you say, envisaging where the progress is going to stop is a difficult one.
But I've gone for Rachel Blackmore. What a year for her. She's been dominating all the biggest festivals. Cheltenham was the Rachel Blackmore Festival. She was electric. She won on Honeysuckle, Bob Olinger. The list goes on. And then she goes to the National and wins the biggest race of them all, the Grand National. There's a little I think she can look back on this year with regret. Maybe the pick in the Gold Cup. But finishing second by a length or so, it wasn't a bad run. I think that she's just been fantastic. She's really picked racing up at a time that it needed a pickup and took it with a massive credit to the sport. A jockey that people and the wider public have taken hold to as well. People that I know that don't follow racing know Rachel Blackmore. Mm. And I think that's a big thing. The likes of a Frankie Dettori, an Oisin Murphy maybe, a Ryan Moore, an AP McCoy, Ruby Walsh. They're the sort of names that you would associate breaking into the wider mould, and she's done that.
And differently as well, she's inspiring young girls to want to come into the sport, yeah. which is huge. You know, as in, sometimes I think racing doesn't big itself up enough about the fact that men and women are competing on equal mm-hmm. terms. But I think Rachel Blackmore, and maybe alongside Holly Doyle on the flat, is almost breaking through even more than the ones that have gone before to yeah. show that. I mean, she was narrowly denied to be champion jockey in mm. Ireland. Holly Doyle looks like a contender for the Flat Jockeys Championship. These girls really are not trailblazers, because there's been plenty of good female riders gone before, but they are taking it to another level, which is phenomenal. Just touching on Rachel Blackmore, I think, again, we're talking about partnerships like the Skeltons with Henry de Bromhead. We yeah. didn't have a trainer's no. title here, but, you know, to the first man to
He'd
win
be winning it.
Champion Hurdle, Champion yeah. Chase, Gold Cup in the 1 week at Cheltenham. And you think of all the brilliant trainers that have gone before yeah. in racing history, and it's never been done. And then to chuck a Grand National into the mix as well.
And the special thing, he had the first and second in the Gold Cup yeah. and the National.
Yeah.
So he would have won it if the first string wasn't winning it anyway.
So I think for all that he's done to help Rachel Blackmore yeah. and his own achievements as well, Henry de Bromhead deserves a special mention.
Absolutely. And that came together properly in the National. Both of our highlights of the season, our moment of the season, is Manila Times winning that. Rachel Blackmore became the first female rider to win the National. And she's almost put this female rider thing to bed now. There isn't an audience for women's football as much as there is the men's, but with racing, people are almost tuning in more to see the women, and that's just brilliant.
And this was, like, it was an iconic sporting moment. If you know, there's not many, probably, if you were going to club together iconic sporting moments, there's not many contenders probably from racing. Maybe Frankie's Magnificent Seven.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to pluck out other answers from the sky, but there's not many of them that transcend and stay in the wider public's mind. And I really feel this win at Aintree is going to be one of those things, because, like I say, there's no getting away from the fact that it was a pivotal moment in sport.
Fantastic jump season, and it's been a shame crowds haven't been able to go to all of them. We had spells here and there. However, it's looking up and positivity is growing with regards to crowds. We're having pilot events in other sporting venues such as Wembley, the FA Cup final, the Carabao Cup final. How good will it be to see crowds back in race courses?
I think it's going to be massive. It's going to be really interesting to see if there is not a surge in popularity of racing, but the fact that there's going to be this novelty element because we haven't been able to go over so long, whether it can encourage new people to come and take an interest in the sport. And then it's going to be down to racing as a whole, how they market that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel that the BHA and all the authorities deserve massive credit for keeping the show on the road. But it's going to be very interesting now moving forward how they embrace the public coming back to watch the sport, and whether we're able to sort of retain and encourage more people into it by the fact that it's going to be something new.
And that ends our jumps discussion. The jump season is well and truly out of the way. We had the Guineas weekend, but there's no finer man to speak to ahead of a flat season than Sean Levy. Delighted to be joined by him. Sean, you've had a good start to the season already. Are you feeling positive about this season?
Oh, excited. I suppose, yeah. I'm looking forward to it more so. So far, it's been very good. We started the year with a lot of winners, a lot of nice horses, which looks like they're going to compete at the top level. So, no, very excited.
Sean, you know plenty about the favourite in the race today. Werko, you finished second on Technique in the Blue Ribbon Trial to him. So, and you must be looking forward to riding her on Saturday at Lingfield.
100%. She was obviously took on the colts that day, and she ran very well, I would have thought. I think the biggest thing in Epsom is how well she handled the track. You know, she came down that hill very well, and she stayed very balanced down the straight. I would have thought Lingfield, I suppose, would geographically probably resembles Epsom in a lot of ways, and I think she'd definitely handle. She'll handle the track there if she goes there, and yeah, I think she'd be very hard beat, especially against her own sex.
Alongside her, you've been associated with another potentially very talented filly with a blue ribbon pedigree and Snow Lantern. I just wondered how the two fillies would compare.
Oh, I think they're quite different. At the moment, we're still finding out about Snow Lantern. She's fairly unexposed. I think we were quoted thinking she wanted a mile and two going in, you know, before she ran in Newbury. But on the back of her Newbury run, we're probably thinking she's got plenty enough speed for a mile. So I think in that regard alone, they're completely different. One, I would have thought, would stay the mile and a half really well, whereas there's still a question mark on how far Snow Lantern would stay. Sorry.
Where can we see her next? Is it the Musidora?
I think she's penciled in to go to a listed race in York as a stepping stone to either the Musidora or the Coronation. It would also, you know, we're still finding out about her, and I think going to York over the mile again would kind of tell us exactly what the right step forward is, whether she wants to be stepping up to a mile and quarter or whether the mile is where she wants to be staying for now.
You mentioned before that Lingfield resembles Epsom quite a bit. High definition, trained by Aidan O'Brien, runs there. He's the Derby favourite, so obviously Aidan likes the course. He also used it with Anthony van Dyck. You've got a close affiliation with Aidan O'Brien and now Richard Hannon. Is there any comparison between the two, or is there anything that they both do very similar?
Yeah, they both train good horses. That's the way of looking at it. Ultimately, trainers train different, you know, they have different facilities and they train in different places. The stock they get in every year are fairly different, but I would say that they're very similar. They're very successful trainers, and they both train a hell of a lot of winners every year, so I've been lucky to have been associated with Aidan, and I'm lucky to be associated with Mr. Hannon now.
Just another one, a nice horse you're associated with, Sean. Happy Romance, that was fourth in last year's Sheebley Park. She won a listed race recently. I saw she's entries in the Irish Guineas and the Commonwealth Cup. I just wondered if there was one target favoured over another at the moment.
I think we've done the right thing by her, as regards we did think she was going to take the Guineas route. She gave us the impression that she would stay because she is a very relaxed type, very professional runner. And I think after her run in Newbury, it was safe to say that she didn't get the 7. There was no way she was going to get the mile. Stepping back to the 6 in Chelmsford, she had a hard enough race. And I would have liked to see her. We'd like to be seeing her in Ascot going forward, really. I think she's going to have to take her chance in probably the Commonwealth, I would have said.
And without just going through horses that you've been on this year, one that I would like to speak to you about is Mum's Tipple, who obviously had such a lofty reputation after his very impressive win at York, must have been at the back end of 2019 now. We've seen him quite a few times this season already, 4 times. The last time was at Leicester behind Pogo. Do you think that he can progress into a group horse this year?
It's very hard to say whether he will or not. Obviously, he's a very likeable horse, and you know, as far as with the connections, they absolutely adore the horse. So there's no doubt that we would like to see him progress through the year. The only thing is, on the back of he had a very bad year last year, so it's very hard to be optimistic on how he's going to transfer you know, how he's been running on the old weather onto the turf this year. I found him slightly disappointing when he ran against Pogo, but that be it, he ran against the Hardy horse, was rated higher than him on the day, and maybe, you know, maybe I thought he should have been winning that race, and he didn't, you know, he didn't quite. So, no, I would like to see him progress, no doubt, and, you know, he's looking better and better every day. He's working very well at home, and I'd like to see him transfer all of that to the racetrack. Yeah, slightly disappointed with his last run. But then again, you know, you can't really knock him all that much. Like, it was a very good race on paper, and he didn't really do all that wrong.
Just moving forward into the summer, like we've been in COVID sort of times for a long while now. I just wondered, as a professional flat jockey, how excited you were about the prospect of the return of crowds during the summer.
Yeah, no, 100%. Obviously, racing is not the same in a spectator sport. It's not the same without the public there. It's been fairly quiet on all race courses, and it's something we've all fairly got used to. But, you know, it is very noticeable when you go into the big meters like Ascot. You know, Epsom's only around the corner now. But the Guineas, I wasn't there, so fair enough. But, you know, those are the days when you really notice the crowds and you notice the atmosphere. And it's pretty much what makes those big meetings so great and memorable, really. So no, I'll be definitely looking forward to more crowds.
And as a rider, Sean, you have an upwardly mobile profile, and I just wondered, for you personally, do you set targets at the beginning of the season? I mean, I see you 28 winners on the board already for the calendar year, so you in theory are on target to have your best ever season. And I just wonder whether you set targets for winners or group winners or anything at the start of the year.
To be honest, group winners and good horses are number one on my book. But I've always felt I was unlucky not to ride 100 winners in the last 3 or 4 seasons, yeah, because it always looked like I was definitely going to be doing that by the end of the year, and then I've had a mishap, so touch wood, I have a straightforward run at it this year, an injury-free run at it this year, and I'll be able to, I would have thought, definitely ride those 100 winners that have eluded me over recent years, and get a bit of quality along the way, then absolutely great. I thought that would be the icing on the cake.
Well, we wish you the very best, Sean. Thank you very much for sparing some of your time, and best of luck at Chester today and for the rest of the week. Go well this season. Does that get you excited for the flat season?
Yeah, it does. I mean, we probably should quickly mention the Guineas at the weekend, shouldn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Jim Bolger is 80 years of age now. Poetic Flair, breded himself, owned by his wife, and another Guineas winner out of us by a stallion that he also raced to win the Guineas himself. Phenomenal achievement.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Aidan O'Brien winning the 1,000 copy and paste, that is, isn't it? Every year.
Yeah, I mean, it lacks originality, doesn't it? But
it shows how good he is.
It does, yeah, it does. And with the 2,000 Guineas winner, it would be interesting now whether the boys in blue come swooping for a big money purchase or to buy a part of him or a stake in Poetic Flair, because we've seen it before. We saw it at Dawn Approach.
Mm-hmm.